From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro has survived a drone attack, according to government officials on Sunday. The Associated Press said that the assailants flew two drones, each packed with a kilogram of C4 plastic explosive, toward Maduro, his wife, and other top leaders as he spoke Saturday evening at an event, and that, quote, a little-known group calling itself Soldiers in T-Shirts claimed responsibility for the attack, saying it planned to fly two drones loaded with explosives at the president, but that soldiers shot them down. So far, six people have been arrested in connection to the attempted assassination. Mr. Maduro also blamed the U.S. for supporting opposition groups against him. On Sunday, Trump's national security advisor, John Bolton, said on Fox News, if the government of Venezuela has hard information that they want to present to us that would show a potential violation of U.S. criminal law, we'll take a serious look at it. On Monday, Venezuelan authorities released a video showing the moment that Maduro was interrupted by the sounds of a loud explosion while speaking at his event. We turn to Miguel Tinker Salas, a professor of Latin American history and Chicano-Chicano Latino-Latina studies at Pomona College in Claremont, California. He's written several books about Venezuela, including The Enduring Legacy, Oil, Culture, and Citizenship in Venezuela, and Venezuela, What Everyone Needs to Know. He's also co-edited Venezuela, Hugo Chavez, and the Decline of an Exceptional Democracy. Welcome to the program, Miguel.
Thank you very much.
How real is, as far as you can tell, are the reports of these attacks? Of course, Venezuela always suffers from very biased media coverage here in the West, and some have suggested that this was something that Maduro might have orchestrated.
Well, I think it's absurd. I mean, the idea that somehow every report on these attacks are referred to as the alleged attacks indicates that, again, it's introducing the idea of doubt. Imagine from a counterpoint, if Maduro had staged this himself, it would make him look weak. It would make him look vulnerable. It made the military running away from the attack looked rather ridiculous. So again, the idea that somehow Maduro staged this as some sort of way from which now to attack the opposition or attack Colombia, I find rather ludicrous at this stage. Again, we have to assume what we saw. And the reality is that other nations are now taking this seriously. This is the first civilian use of a drone to try to kill a head of state. So in today's inauguration in Colombia of Iván Duque as the new president, they have prohibited any use of drones anywhere near where the inauguration is taking place.
I want to play for you and our audience an excerpt of an Al Jazeera report that includes the video of the moment that the explosion struck and the reaction of soldiers that you just described, basically scattering. They were scrambling. They were clearly panicked. And we'll also hear what John Bolton said on Fox News.
This was the moment when two bomb-laden drones allegedly exploded during a military parade in Caracas on Saturday. Security agents quickly surrounded President Nicolas Maduro and hustled him off the reviewing platform. Meanwhile, Venezuelan soldiers marching in formation broke and ran in all directions. Witnesses described loud blasts and smoke. Maduro immediately blamed his right-wing opponents for the apparent attack, elements of which he said were active in the United States. He also implicated Colombia's president, Juan Manuel Santos.
They tried to assassinate me, and I have no doubt that everything points to the right, the Venezuelan ultra-right in alliance with the Colombian ultra-right, and that the name of Juan Manuel Santos is behind this attempt.
Colombia's Foreign Affairs Ministry called that accusation absurd, and in Washington, President Donald Trump's national security advisor strongly denied any U.S. role.
Well, I can say unequivocally there was no U.S. government involvement in this at all.
It has been widely reported that Trump repeatedly suggested a military invasion of Venezuela last year, but was talked out of it by senior officials. Bolton speculated, without providing evidence, that Maduro's government may itself be responsible for the apparent drone bombing.
Now, with respect to what happened last afternoon, it could be a lot of things, from a pretext set up by the Maduro regime itself to something else.
On Sunday, Venezuela's interior minister showed pictures of a type of drone he claimed was used. Officials allege each carried a kilogram of the plastic explosive C4.
We have so far six terrorists and hitmen detained, several vehicles seized, several raids in hotels have been carried out in our nation's capital, where very important evidence has been gathered.
And that is Venezuela's interior minister displaying photographs of the drone, of the type of drone that they found having attacked or attempted to attack President Nicolas Maduro. That was part of an Al Jazeera report on the issue. My guest is Miguel Tinker Salas. And as you said, Miguel, we shouldn't be surprised that armed drones are being used to potentially carry out these sorts of targeted assassinations, because that's what the U.S. has done in the theater of war on the other side of the planet. Now, who is this? What is this organization that took credit for the attack? I've never heard of, and that many others haven't heard of as well. Soldiers in T-shirts.
It's a rather strange group. They have a Twitter account, 95,000 followers. Well, we do know that this is now a third attempt at some sort of military intervention or ouster of Maduro. The first was the military police person who used a helicopter to bomb parts of Caracas and throw grenades, Oscar Perez. Then there was the small insurrection at the Maracay military base, Paramacay, that was also a part of this. So they are taking credit as part of a triad of events in which they are attempting to oust or to cause an insurrection or to foment some sort of discontent in the military. What is really at play here is that the opposition in Venezuela, or a significant portion of the opposition in Venezuela, has essentially given up on the electoral process. They were defeated earlier in an election, which they claim was illegitimate. And many have now given up on the electoral process. So that means that they have two options, either a foreign intervention or some sort of military coup or some sort of effort at killing Maduro. That's a tragedy for Venezuela, because you need an opposition in Venezuela to challenge the government, to provide an alternative, and to question his policies. So what's happened is that a significant portion of that opposition has given up on the electoral process.
How realistic is Maduro's assertion that Colombia was behind this attack? He accused Colombia, and as you said, the outgoing president, Juan Manuel Santos, the new president is being inaugurated Tuesday, Iván Duque. But the Venezuelan government is now saying that they have evidence pointing to Colombia.
Well, they need to show the evidence. This is the problem with accusations. They said that they have evidence that the U.S. involvement, or that the Miami-Bogota alliance against Venezuela, which for many may sound customary, because, again, we know that Venezuela has been targeted for regime change by the U.S. since Hugo Chavez was elected in 1998. And we've seen multiple efforts, whether they were coups or whether they were orchestrated strikes or whether there were other such events. But the reality is the government needs to show evidence. They can't just simply say that Bogota was involved. I think behind saying Bogota was involved is a way of trying to also pin in not Santos, but actually Iván Duque, because Iván Duque has promised a much more militant stance against Maduro, talking about potentially border events or border incidents, because the great fear is that Duque takes power in Colombia, there is a border incident created, fabricated, or real or otherwise, and then that becomes a pretext for Duque and company to invade Venezuela. We should also keep in mind that the operation against Maduro was called Operation Phoenix. Your listeners may not recall that, but Operation Phoenix was the name of the operation that the Colombians called when they invaded Ecuador, when they were following into Ecuador, trying to arrest or kill Raul Reyes of the FARC, which they did in 2008.
Wow. So there's some significance there. Now, the U.S. and Colombia's relations with Iván Duque taking the helm of Colombia, does that pose a threat for Venezuela? I mean, the U.S. has long had relations with Colombia, has funded Colombia's military and a terribly destructive and violent crackdown under the pretext of a drug war. So there's a long history there of militarism, U.S. fueled militarism in Colombia with a U.S.-friendly government in place. So with this new president coming into power, does a U.S.-Colombia alliance prove to be an even greater threat to Venezuela?
It can. Again, Duque is the protege of Álvaro Uribe, probably the most powerful man in Colombia, a two-time president, mentor of Juan Manuel Santos, and now mentor of Iván Duque. They actually call him his mirror double image. So again, with Uribe and Duque in control, there might be an increased pressure on the border and on Venezuela. But on the other hand, you have the election of Andrés Manuel López Obrador. And it'll be very interesting because what's going to happen is that both countries belong to the group of Lima. Since the OAS has not proven to be the vehicle through which these countries can pressure Venezuela, they created the group of Lima, or the Lima group, and both Mexico under Peña Nieto and Colombia under Santos are part of that and have been using the Lima group to pressure Venezuela on multiple occasions. So it will be a test to see what happens now with Duque in Colombia, but also López Obrador in Mexico.
Going back to the attempted assassination aimed at Maduro, presumably he was the main target. The vulnerability that he is facing from these various forces also are added to the list of the problems he's facing at home with the ailing economy. You and I have talked in the past several times about Venezuela's oil-dependent economy that's deeply struggling and that has really impacted poor Venezuelans who are at the core, the base of the Bolivarian Revolution and Maduro's party. Any change in that? Has there been any change in the economy, or are Venezuelans still struggling?
They are still struggling. The conditions in the country are harsh for most people who spend most of the day simply trying to find the basic needs, trying to pay for them, find them. It's a tragedy. There's hundreds of thousands of Venezuelans who have left the country, who are now in Colombia, in Ecuador, in Peru, in the Dominican Republic, for the first time forced to leave their country. So conditions are deplorable. And I think Maduro has more to fear from the inability to correct the economy, to right the ship, than from the right, which is very divided and disunited in the context of Venezuela. That's not to say internationally. The government has proposed some changes, and Maduro claims that, or at least Maduro followers claim that the assassination attempt was so that he wouldn't implement the changes. Some people are very skeptical, and I'm still skeptical about some of those changes. That is, removing four zeros off of the existing currency, where the inflation now, by some accounts, is into the hundreds of thousands, if not close to a million. At the same time, the scarcity, the dependence on oil, the extremely low price for subsidized gasoline. There was a national census of cars, which now the government says that unless your car has been re-registered, you will not be able to get gasoline or parts. So there are several moving parts here, none of which by themselves will improve the economy, because, again, the continued dependence on oil and on the heavy crude deposits in the Orinoco Basin, because, again, they require double the effort to process them, and it required the importation of light crude from even the U.S. to process them. So the economy really is in a bind, and the crisis is not new. So many of these so-called changes and reforms are long, long overdue, including currency issues of the Venezuelan Bolivar on the informal market is at 3.6 million to $1. It's outrageous. So that in that condition, conditions in Venezuela are still very, very deplorable for the majority of the population.
What do you expect, or can you make sense of Trump's position on Venezuela? Past U.S. administrations have been quite hostile to Venezuela, whether it was Chavez or Maduro. As I mentioned, the media coverage is generally biased from the West and just not balanced enough. And so can you make sense of whether Venezuela does figure on Trump's radar, especially through his hawkish national security advisors like John Bolton, or are they sort of not paying as much attention, much more interested in the Middle East and Iran?
No, I think they're very interested in Venezuela. I think Trump's information that was revealed by certain news sources that Trump had asked his advisors, what's the problem just invading Venezuela, and also relinquishing largely foreign policy on Venezuela and Latin America to Marco Rubio, who has been known to say, why don't we intervene in Venezuela? Why isn't there a coup in Venezuela? Rex Tillerson, the former Secretary of State, said exactly the same thing. And we should be also careful with Mike Pence, because Mike Pence has now made several trips to Latin America, where he's trying to shore up the Lima group, where he's meeting with countries in the region, and where he has recently been in Ecuador, for example. So I think that the Trump administration is very keen on developments in Latin America, particularly in Venezuela, and have again been more outward in their declarations about military intervention, about coups in Venezuela, than other administrations in the past.
Miguel, you had gone to Mexico during the recent elections there that resulted in a major victory for Andrés Manuel López Obrador, whom we mentioned earlier. And I'm wondering, in the context of the conversation around U.S. role in Latin America, how you expect to see a Trump relationship with López Obrador, or AMLO as people call him, given Trump's very, very hostile attitude, of course, towards Mexico, Mexicans. He doubled down on his deplorable comments where he had, during his campaign, referred to Mexicans as rapists and drug dealers. Last week at a rally, he referred to those comments without repeating them, but then said, oh, that there was so much more, and that those comments were nothing compared to what's really happening. And of course, he's continued pushing on the wall between the U.S. and Mexico. Still, he says he really likes AMLO.
Well, I think it's a one-way romance. I don't think it's mutually. We should remember, when AMLO was running for president, he wrote a book called Listen, Trump, in which he denounced the wall, in which he denounced the immigration policy of the U.S., in which he denounced the deportations of Mexican immigrants and other immigrants as well. So I think it's a one-way relationship. Although we should point out that in the very first week of the election, after the election, when AMLO was the president designate, there was a high-level delegation from the U.S. that included Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, Secretary Mnuchin, of course, Jared Kushner, who has to go everywhere, and his son-in-law, and the head of Homeland Security. And they met with AMLO and indicated they wanted to have good relations. I would put that in the context of, at the same time, the U.S. administration under Trump was being blasted in the U.S. for the deportation of children and of families and mothers, etc. And that was an effort to try to at least placate one element in Latin America while they were being attacked at another. So I think there was a context for that. And I doubt that Trump will dissuade from attacking Mexico whenever it is politically expedient, as we saw recently on the wall, and again on the issue you mentioned about the deplorables.
When we had covered the election in Mexico, we spoke with several people who sort of warned that AMLO may not be what he seems. He's more of an Obama-type figure than a Bernie Sanders-type figure. You know, on the one hand, just paying lip service to eradicating poverty and, you know, being a liberal ruler. And certainly, compared to his predecessor, he may well be that way. But others are much more excited. Where do you fall on the spectrum of how you view AMLO's coming, you know, how he's just started? He's only been in office for, what, a few weeks. How you view what he's going to be?
This is actually he will be sworn in December 1st. So he's still the president-elect.
But you're right. That's right. He's not actually started serving.
But in essence, he has become the de facto president. I mean, the Peña Nieto administration was considered so bad by most Mexicans that essentially power has been transferred to AMLO, even though Peña Nieto is still president until December 1st. But again, I think that I've written about this previously in the North American Congress on Latin America, NACLA. AMLO is not a socialist. AMLO came out of the PRI. He was a reformist. He was a nationalist. He was progressive on certain issues. So I think that what he confronts, though, is a tremendous level of expectation. Mexicans are yearning for a change, a dramatic change, a change on corruption, a change on the policies, the neoliberal economic policies, a change on the drug war. And AMLO has a short amount of period to address these issues. And I think time will tell, once he becomes president on December 1st, what he's able to do. Today he is in Ciudad Juarez, actually meeting with in a forum for peace, in which he's making proposals about amnesty in the drug war and trying to find a different solution than rather the military solution for the drug war. So as I pointed out earlier, he has in fact, even though not assumed office, is functioning as the de facto president.
Wow. He has also said that he will not be threatened by talk of a wall, which was a jab at Trump. And in fact, he wrote a book about Trump that's been translated into English. So he's certainly somebody who takes seriously the president of the United States and U.S.-Mexico relations, and might be a different sort of a leader compared to Peña Nieto. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Miguel Tinker Salas. Really appreciate all your work.
Thank you.
My guest is Miguel Tinker Salas. He's a professor of Latin American history and Chicano Latino Latina studies at Pomona College in Claremont, California. He's written several books, including The Enduring Legacy, Oil Culture and Citizenship in Venezuela, and other books on Venezuela. We've been discussing not just Venezuela, but Mexico. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and now Instagram at RUWithSonali.